Jim.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The Sergeant of Arms will bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is our Senate Chaplain, Reverend Phil Shaw from Rochester, Minnesota. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. Reverend Shaw.
Nice to see you again. I've heard via the grapevine that you've been fairly busy. And I first of all want to thank you as a constituent for the work that you do, the hard work you do for our state. And secondly, I got good news. There's help on the way. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I just ask today that you'll bless the members of this Senate as they think together and as they work together, both in this chamber and in the committee meetings and in their offices, and help them to stand up under the strains and the tensions and the problems and decisions and the meetings and the conferences and the endless demands that are made upon them. And teach them how to relax and to take time to turn to you for guidance and strength and to discover the secret of power. In thy name we ask it. Amen. God bless you.
The Pledge of Allegiance will be led today by Mr. Tom Mullen of Eagan, Minnesota. Mr. Mullen served in the U.S. Army from 1961 to 1967 and was an Army combat medic in Vietnam from 1965 to 1966. From 1993 to 2004, he was the director of the VA Medical Center in Minneapolis. Currently, he is the commander of American Legion Post 594 in Eagan. Mr. Mullen, will you please lead the Minnesota Senate in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Thank you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Hand, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Lori, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Uyghur, Wolf.
Quorum is present. Moving on to the fifth order of business on the Senate agenda, reports of committees. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Moving on to the seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. Second reading. Moving on to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills, with the exception of Senate file number 2563 on your Senate bill introductions, referred to the Committee on Agriculture and Rural Economics. First reading. Moving on to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. We will adopt these with one motion. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, members, there's been a request by the minority to have some time to go over bills and things like that, I would suggest we recess and let's just be safe about it. Let's recess to 1:15.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President, Senator Sundrum, for accommodating members that were late getting into town this morning. Democrats will caucus in room 107 immediately.
All those in favor of the recess, say aye. Opposed, same sign. Senate is in recess.
Number 179, Olson. I'm just going to go through them quickly. Number 71, Gazelka. Number 72, Han. Number 164, Olson. Number 59, Nelson. Number 78, Thompson. Number 101, Cruz. Number 160, Hall. Number 162, Harrington. Number 127, Bonhoeffer. Number 115, Stump.
On the motion, all in favor say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Moving on to special orders, the first one will be number 59, Senate File 2213, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2213 specifies student academic growth requirement for principal evaluations. You might recall, this might sound like a little bit of deja vu to you, but 2011 election law that passed out of this body contained provisions requiring regular evaluations of principals that will be effective in 2013 and 14, and teachers effective in 2014 and 15 that are linked to student test scores. Further, the 2011 specified for teachers, but not for principals, that 35% of the evaluation must be linked to student academic growth. This legislation, Senate File 2213, modifies the law affecting principal evaluations by likewise specifying that 35% of principal evaluations be based on measurable student academic growth. Members, this bill is sponsored also by Senator Wolf, Senator Olson, and Senator Bonhoeff, the very same authors who sponsored the original principal evaluation bill. There is no fiscal impact. Education accountability and reform advocates support an evaluation process for principals that is specifically tied to how well students are actually performing in academics. This includes MNCAN, Minnesota Business Partnership, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and New Leaders. Education Minnesota did not take a position on this bill. And with that, I stand for any questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 2213, Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. President. One of evolution of the evaluation system that started last year and kind of has carried over this year was how this percentage would be used. And I think that's been a real kind of a sticking point, I think, for both teachers as they move into that measurement or that evaluation system and principals. And I'm wondering, Senator Nelson, if you could give us a little bit of an insight into how that evaluation system or how that 35% would be used for principals. I think for the teachers, it is a little bit different than for the principals. But I think that's the key, I think, in terms of how that the system works in terms of using the 35%.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Stump. The task force that the principal evaluation task force that was put together that rolled out the principal evaluation bill will need to determine that. However, we do know that student performance does need to be included. You might recall that we got waivers from No Child Left Behind based upon the fact that we would have principal evaluation and that it would include student performance. The language that you have before you today is language that came from the department. And again, it's necessary for the waivers that we've asked for, or that we've received.
Further discussion on Senate File 2213, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise to support the Senate file as well, Senate File 2213. I had the privilege of being on the principal task force, principal evaluation task force, and was very impressed with the quality and the caliber of the principals that did serve on that committee, as well as those other folks who were administrators. And I know that there was an inability for that group to agree on putting the actual percentage in it, but it wasn't because they didn't think it was important to include the measure of student achievement. They couldn't, in fact, agree that it was the right thing to include a percentage. Yet, why I think it's important, besides, of course, the obvious, what Senator Nelson said, in that the waiver is dependent on having that percentage, and we did get the waiver, and we put that in our application, but also I think, you know, in terms of being in management, if you're expecting your teachers to be evaluated based on 35% of their evaluation being linked in some form to achievement, then I think it's important for management to mirror that. I think that we lead by example, and there's actually a great deal of flexibility. The principals, when we say they'll be evaluated 35% based on the student performance, it doesn't spell out in what way that's going to be done. And so there is a great deal of flexibility. They can determine that locally, and I trust that they will do that and will actually learn from those in the field as they develop that.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I'm going to oppose this bill. Just based on two little things. And one is that the principal evaluation working group that Senator Bonoff just referenced was put together for the express purpose of figuring out a way to evaluate the principals. And this was not one of the recommendations. And I'm not sure why we put these groups together if we're not going to adhere to what they come up with after they've done some studying and after they've been together for a while. The second reason is that I'm hearing that if we are going to require teachers to rely on 35% of the student academic growth and evaluate them based on that particular principle, then we should also evaluate the principals on that same particular principle. But I don't think principals are teachers, and I don't think teachers are principals. And it's one thing to say that teachers are in the classroom and they're having an effect on the teachers, on the students' progress. It's a whole other thing to say that management is doing exactly the same thing as teachers are and therefore should be evaluated the same. And so I think that we are comparing apples to oranges, and that this does not make sense to do it for the principals also.
Further discussion on Senate File 2213? Seeing none, Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File Number 2213, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would Senator Nelson yield for a question?
She will yield.
Thank you. Senator Nelson, could you please explain to the body what the 35% requirement is, which 35% requirement, the 35% is that of student growth or 35% of student achievement test scores, which test it is, that sort of thing.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sieben, as was discussed earlier, it is very flexible. I do believe, however, the waivers are based upon student growth, but the exact test is certainly something that is up to the individual districts as far as how are they going to measure that student growth. But the important piece is that it is based upon student growth, student performance.
Further discussion? Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 55 ayes and 6 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next on special orders will be number 71, House File 2376. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President. This is my bill.
You may proceed.
Mr. President, members, the legislation that was brought forth here came from the Little Falls School District. They wanted to purchase some equipment related to food services, and they had to work with the Department of Education here in Minnesota, and it took a lot longer than it needed to. And so they approached myself and Representative Lemire about changing that. Current state law prevents a school district from using a surplus in its food service fund to purchase food service equipment unless it's approved by the Minnesota Department of Education. So this bill changes that. It allows the school district to move ahead without that permission. It returns the responsibility to do this to the local control, and that's, I think, what we've been trying to do, is any area that we can give them the authority to move forward like this, we want to. There is no opposition that I'm aware of. In fact, the people that passed the original legislation more than a decade ago to have the Education Department involved now are working to make sure they change that.
Further discussion on House File 2376? Seeing none, Secretary will give it its third reading.
House File Number 2376, a bill for an act relating to education finance, third reading.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Secretary will close the roll. Or excuse me, we'll take roll. All senators voting who have desired to vote, secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next on special orders is number 72, Senate File 2088, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. Member, Senate File 2088 is a bill that is very brief in its effect, or very doesn't have a huge complex effect here. We're just changing a date. Currently, Minnesota law requires teachers that are under probationary status. In probationary status, it must be notified by June 1st of the intention to not renew their contract for the following year. This bill simply changes that date to be July 1st, which is consistent with the non-renewal date for non-probationary teachers. It does not require that a school district wait until July 1st. It just requires that the notification be done by July 1st. No opposition was presented in committee on this bill. It's a very simple change to make the two dates the same. And I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 2088. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just for clarification, I express some opposition to this bill simply on the fact that this will give less time to the teachers to find jobs. What we know is that teachers will have a teacher that received this notification early May, June will have more time. These are the times when individuals are looking for opportunities in other schools, in other districts. If we delay this to July, that puts them in an awkward situation to find a job. Most districts and schools make decisions between May and June, and I expressed that concern in committee. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 2088, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I just in response to the point raised by Senator Torres Ray, with the way that the school year is managed today, most school districts are in session or having classes beyond the 1st of June, sometimes the 2nd or 3rd week of June. So certainly teachers that would be affected by this would most likely still be teaching classes at the time the current June 1st date would show up. So I think this would make sense just to make sure that the school year has been completed, and I don't believe that it'll have a significant impact on the ability of probationary teachers to secure new positions. The bill is supported by the School Board Association, among others.
Further discussion on Senate File 2088. Seeing none, secretary will give it its third reading.
Senate File Number 2088, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Further discussion? Seeing none, secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes and 15 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on, special orders number 164, Senate file 2535, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate file 2535 is a bill that was brought to me by the Minnesota Board of School Administrators. They are a board that oversees the licensing of public school superintendents, principals, and other school administrators. The purpose of the bill is to make some minor modifications in the law that affects them and that it created them. Under this bill, it's the responsibility that they have to approve or disapprove administrator preparation programs is clarified. The second thing it does is that the existing yearly license fee of $75 is put on a fiscal year basis rather than a calendar year one. And lastly, if the yearly fee is not paid in a timely manner, the negligent persons will have their license suspended until payment. This has been agreed to by the board, and they have asked for these changes and clarifications. So I would urge your support. But I'd be happy to stand for any questions if you have them.
Further discussion on Senate File 2535? Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File number 2535, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Further discussion on Senate File 2535. Seeing none, Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted who desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. There being 62 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next on special orders is number 101, House File 2078, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. Before us today, we have House File 2078. This is a bill regarding non-public school textbook aid. Current law states that qualifying non-public schools through an application process are allowed a small amount of aid from the school districts. It typically ends up being about $80 to $100 per year based on the per pupil formula to use for instructional materials. Essentially, what this legislation would do is expand that so that they would be able to use technology-based software, hardware. That's kind of the direction we're going right now. So this would only allow for an expansion of use of those same amount of dollars for those materials. Mr. President, I do have an amendment. At this point, I'd like to offer the A1 amendment.
Senator Cruz offers the A1 amendment. Secretary will read the amendment.
Senator Cruz moves to amend House File 2078 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate March 20, 2012 as follows. Page 3, line 26, delete. This is the A1 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Cruz.
Mr. President and members, when we were in the Education Committee, the department approached us with a last-minute amendment, which we were happy to incorporate into the legislation. We found out afterwards that left room for some grammatical corrections. So this amendment simply corrects some grammar errors. If you look on page 3, it would delete an and, it would insert an or. On line 27, it would delete the first comma. And then there's two more changes on page 4. On line 2, it deletes a period and inserts a comma. And then on line 3, it deletes the word and again and incorporates the word or.
Further discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Further discussion on House File 2078. Secretary will give it its third reading.
House File Number 2078, a bill for an act relating to education finance, third reading.
Further discussion on House File 2078. Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. There being 56 ayes and 6 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on to number 179 on special orders, House File 2083, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 2083 is fondly referred to as the SHIFT bill. This is the bill that will return us by the end of the fiscal, the 2012 fiscal year or 2013 fiscal year, to a 70-30 payment schedule, which is what we began this biennial session with. As you know, we've unfortunately have relied, and that this is nothing new, on shifting payments to schools, making them cope for a time, without cutting the actual dollars they receive, but affecting the timing of when they receive them. We've done this a number of times over the years, including quite heavily in the fiscal year 2010 and 2011. It went from 90-10 to 73-27 in fiscal year 2010 and to 70-30 in fiscal year 2011. This bill will, as I said, will restore it to 70-30, which was what it was at the beginning of this biennium. We have already, because of two positive budget forecasts, reduced that amount from 60-40 or increased it up to 64.3 to 35.7 because of the amount that was left after filling the cash flow and the budget reserve. So that bit of progress has been made at those payments, I believe, started going out to the schools this month. And what this bill would do was to increase that by another $415 million, which is being taken from the budget reserve. It was about $315 million approximately, or $318 million. It's kind of moves around. It was what has happened so far. What also is included in this bill is, in addition to, in the process of shifting to the normal 90-10 at the beginning of the next biennium, an amendment was put on at the Finance Committee. It was carried by Senator Nenow that would start for the 14-15 biennium, that every program that is paid for by the state's general fund, with the exceptions of education and debt service, would be reduced by 1%, and then the proceeds of that action used to further reduce the shift. Also in that additional provision is that the school district contracts would no longer be in full force and effect past their expiration date if they contain provisions granting automatic salary increases to employees, such as now occurs with the steps and lanes. So it would encourage people to get settled by the end of the contract time. School aid appropriations also are adjusted throughout the statutes. If you scan over, there are several pages to reflect the new 70-30 shift, as well as the budget forecast updates that include the number of pupils and other factors in them. So that is what this bill does. It returns to the 70-30 shift. The amendment provides for some ongoing reduction of the shift that occurred in the previous biennium, that from down from 90-10, to start that path back based on a 1% reduction in general fund expenditures, except for education and debt service, and the contract limitation. I'd be happy to stand for any questions. We do have, and I don't know if it's been passed out yet, but there is a spreadsheet. See my name on it, a spreadsheet that Mr. Nauman has put together that shows the effects of the entire bill, including the initial proposal, as well as the 1% reduction and what it will do in the 14-15 school year. Let me, if you have that, let me point you to the proper lines. Line number 3, the aid payment shift for 12-13 is $339,301,000. And then if you, $301,000, I think it is, or whatever. A couple more appropriate lines are 179 and 180 that are the impact of the amendment, so that you will see that there's a reduction of $102 million in fiscal year 14 and $101 million in fiscal year 15. They're also, if you look at the total, because they calculate this by rounding to the nearest tenth of a percent, there's about 6.9 million that is left on that bottom line. And on line 199, on page 5 of the spreadsheet, you will see the total amount of the shift that is in this bill, which is $415,505,000. Mr. President, I do have a technical amendment. It's the A-12 amendment.
Senator Olson offers the A-12 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Olson moves to amend House File Number 2083, the unofficial engrossment, as follows. Page 2, line 10, delete. This is the A-12 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Olson.
The A-12 amendment amends the section in the first article relative to debt service equalization, and it adjusts those appropriations needed to conform to the 14-15 fiscal year impact of the Nino Amendment.
Further discussion on House File 2083, on the amendment, the A-12 amendment. Senator Cohen.
Not on the amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion on the A-12 amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails.
Mr. President.
Now, further discussion on House File 2083. Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, I understand the desire on the part of people in this chamber to try to get out, even in some small way, from a very bad decision made last year. But this is a bad bill compounding a bad decision. And I say that with all respect for Senator Olson, who I've enjoyed serving with over these number of years. But members, this just compounds the difficulty that the state of Minnesota has been in. We finally have been able to turn a small corner relative to where the budget is, and we finally have been able to possibly look at some stability in the budget. But keep in mind, members, even if we have a small surplus for this year's biennium, the budget still reflects a $1.1 billion deficit for the next biennium. Members, what happens if we find ourselves in situations we can't control? Situations such as international geopolitics. What happens if we have national economic considerations that we can't control? What happens then is we go back into, we're already in deficit, but we go to a higher deficit. That's what you use a budget reserve for. We finally are putting money back into the reserve. Because keep in mind, we did something last year that, as best I know, has never been done, where we utilized not only the entirety of the budget reserve, but the entirety of the cash flow account. That puts a state's finances, any government's finances, in significant jeopardy relative to bond ratings, relative to fiscal stability. Dr. Stinson has warned us, and for those of you who are newer to this place, let me just suggest Dr. Tom Stinson, I think, is probably recognized as, I would argue, the single most valuable person in state government and a person who is not partisan in the least. He is always very circumspect in what he says. He has served with governors of all parties, and I think what Dr. Stinson says is something that we've always tried to pay close attention to. What he has stated is that, when he's done with this recent forecast, is that there could be as much of $1 billion variance in the budget forecast next year very easily. Yet with this legislation, we are taking the one safety that we have and simply tossing it away for the sake of a political vote to get out of a bad decision from last year. And again, I recognize why members want to do that. A lot of pressure, a lot of negative reaction to last year's budget decision on the part of the Senate at the special session. But why do we put ourselves in a posture where we're going to simply repeat history? It just makes no sense at all. And to suggest that this kind of fig leaf approach to the school shift will let members off the hook, believe me, it doesn't. It just makes no sense at all to compound what we did last year by putting into jeopardy, further jeopardy, our bond rating, putting into further jeopardy where our surplus and or deficit might be. To do this in this fashion is simply not only unwarranted, it's very, very unwise. We could well face the situation, given where our budget is, that the state will have to fall back on short-term borrowing. Now, it might be one thing for us to fall back on short-term borrowing where the economic and fiscal circumstances are such that there's just no choice. But to do it because of a mistake we make with this legislation is highly inadvisable. And Mr. President, members, let me make one other comment about the bill in front of us. Senator Nino authored an amendment in the Finance Committee to take 1%, and Senator Olson made a reference to this amendment, to take 1% of general fund dollars and other fund, general fund dollars other than school aids and I think debt service, and have that used against the school shift. A clever idea, but let me make it very clear what the Department of Management and Budget has said about that clever idea. It adds to the deficit. And if you look at the spreadsheet that was distributed by Senator Olson on line 180, unallocated shift funds from general fund 1% reduction provision, and you look over across on that line, it shows numbers in parentheses. What does that mean? That means it's added to the deficit. So by voting for this bill, not only are you taking money away from the reserve to pay back on a one-time basis a small amount of the shift, you also are adding $150 million, whatever the figure is, to, I think it's not quite the 150. I think that's the figure that was used in finance, but it appears that it's a little bit less than that. You're adding that to the deficit. So if you're concerned about going out to campaign and facing the school shift from last year, you also get credit then during the campaign for adding to the deficit, because that's how this is scored. That's how this is added. It's very, very simple arithmetic, very, very simple budgeting for a state government. You've added to the deficit. Congratulations.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, bad decisions from last year? Really? We had a $5 billion budget shortfall. And with the tough decisions we made, we have a $1.2 billion surplus that we used to replace the cash flow account, the budget reserve account, paid back part of the school shift. Those are bad decisions? Really? Members, what we did was nothing short of amazing. We made incredibly, incredibly tough decisions. And frankly, we'll have, if this passes, we'll have over $500 million more in the cash flow account and budget reserve account than we did when we came here. I think that's pretty amazing. And finally, let me just say that, yeah, you're right. We don't know what the future is going to hold. We are making the tough decisions. We put ourselves in a good spot. But what should happen is we will be in the place we need to be, a healthy place. But if not, isn't it better, Mr. President and members, that it's us, the legislative bodies and the governor, that are responsible for the debt and not our local school districts? Isn't it better that we follow through and pay what we owe?
Mr. President.
Senator Langseth.
Well, Mr. President, in the Finance Committee, Minnesota Management and Budget said this was a very bad idea, and they opposed it. You know, we had very good legislation when it directed the first money showing up going to the cash flow account and the reserve account. By taking over $400 million out of there, we are jeopardizing the next year or two. We're going to be adding to the $1.1 billion deficit of the next biennium, but we don't know for sure what's going to happen to the economy over the next few months. A lot of things in this world are very precarious. Something could happen in Iran and the price of gasoline go to $5, and we could have a real dip in the money coming in. If things go very well, as we hope they will, next November we can probably come up with some more money to go to the school aid shift. But that would be done in a very responsible manner. This is a very irresponsible manner, and the bond companies, I'm sure, are looking at this, and they see that we're going back on our word of replenishing the reserve accounts. So it's a very irresponsible action, and I oppose it.
Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I'll just repeat what Senator Gazelka had to say, because he hit it right on the money. When we came to this legislature, we were faced with the largest deficit in the history of the state of Minnesota. And we, through those tough decisions he referred to, have changed that record deficit into a surplus of over $1 billion. Senator Cohen, I almost can't believe your words. We've cleaned up the mess that the DFL-controlled legislature gave to us, and we did it with those tough decisions. This vote should be 67-0. We should do this for the kids. This is about the children. This is about the school children. Anything less is not right. Anything less does not do right by the kids.
Senator Roebling.
Last year when Governor Dayton put together his supplemental budget, he proposed leaving $95 million in the cash flow account and $8.7 million in the reserve for a total of $103 million. Even if we pass this bill today, we will still have $350 million in the cash flow account and $243 million in the budget reserve for a total of almost $593 million. Members, that is a tremendous turnaround. It is truly a tremendous turnaround, and we are in much better shape than we were last year, absolutely moving in the right direction. And today, making the decision that instead of asking the school districts to borrow more money, that we'll take that risk upon ourselves. And so that's what we're deciding today. And I will remind you, we are in much better shape.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wonder if Senator Cohen will yield for a question.
Senator Cohen will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Cohen, I'm wondering if Senator Cohen was not one of the legislators in 2010 that voted to change the school shift from 90-10 to 73-27 in 2010, and then to 70-30 for 2011, and to borrow $1.4 billion in the school shift. Senator Cohen, didn't you vote for that?
Senator Cohen.
Mr. President, that was actually my twin brother. I thought. Well, Mr. President, Senator Ortman, the answer is yes, I did vote for that. And Senator Ortman, keep in mind, the Minnesota State Senate, when we were in the majority, looked for different ways to do things to try to affect a fiscally more stable budget, as was the case with Governor Dayton last year. Governor Dayton's first choice was not to do what we ultimately did. Governor Dayton's choice was to present a balanced budget that took a combination of cuts and revenues. He was not looking to borrow as the legislature did in the significant number, nor did the DFL Senate, as you point out, do that in the way that was done last year. So yes, at the end of the day, did I vote for that? Yes. But was that the position of the state Senate? Was that our favored position, our first position? No. And I can only suggest, Mr. President, you know, Senator Daley, in offering some criticism of my remarks, suggested we're doing this for the kids. I just hope, Mr. President, we do this for the kids. We teach the kids better arithmetic than was represented in front of us today.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, I'm wondering if Senator Langseth might yield.
Senator Langseth will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm wondering if Senator Langseth was not one of the members that voted to reduce the school shift from 90-10 to 73-27 and then to 70-30 for 2010 and 2011 and increase the school shift borrowing to $1.4 billion and vote for that $39 billion budget for 2012-13.
Senator Langseth.
Mr. President, Senator Ortman, yes, I probably did. But we are back on the upswing now, and we can do things responsibly, and we can get this state back into shape financially. The first thing we have to do is what we have done. Replenish the cash flow account, replenish the reserve account, and pay back the schools, $318 million we've done so far. We're on track. We're doing the right thing, and hopefully this economy will come up to the point where we can, there would be more going to the schools next year. But I don't think we should go back and start taking money out of the reserve.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. It certainly wasn't anyone's first choice to borrow against the school shift in 2011. It was Governor Dayton's insistence that we raise taxes and spend more that led us to the place where we ultimately agreed to borrow against the school shift. By the way, he's still trying to raise taxes, even though we now have a surplus. But I think it's responsible on our part to pay back that school shift if we can. And we've done the right thing with fiscal discipline, members. We did reduce what was a deficit and turn it into a surplus. And I believe we at the state capitol should take responsibility for our financial decisions, and this is one very important way to do that, to say that if there is any kind of risk for cash flow issues, we should bear it, not the schools. And we are here to say we borrowed against the school, most of it in 2010, I might add, when many of us here voted no. But we are doing the responsible thing to pay them back. The first $300 million has already gone out. We should pay the rest back and come clean.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to also remind members that while we are using some of the reserves to reduce the borrowing from the school shift, I think that is appropriate. I think it is prudent. And I have looked at some of the history of these accounts of cash flow and the reserve accounts over the past number of years. And this amount of money that we would leave in those accounts at the conclusion of paying back part of the shift that was the effect of the budget we passed last year would still leave the reserves at a higher amount than in the past 17 years. There's only been, I think, seven other years where they've had a higher amount than what we would leave in those reserves after this payback would take place. I'd also like to remind members that last March, in Governor Dayton's supplementary budget proposal, his proposal left about $103 million in total in the reserves and cash flow account. And at that time, the MMB seemed to think that was appropriate. I'm a little surprised that today they're saying that leaving over half a billion is not appropriate. So members, I think it's important to keep this into context. This is something that none of us wanted to do. We weren't looking to enact a further shift on education. I think Senator Ortman is correct. We were led to that as a compromise due to the fact that the governor was insisting on raising even higher burdens of taxation on the people of the state of Minnesota. So we did not come to this point willingly, or we did not propose this as the ideal solution. But now that we have an opportunity to restore that shift back to at least where it was when the last Democrat majority was running the legislature, I think we ought to take advantage of that and do that, and we would still leave our reserves in a very healthy condition.
Further discussion on House File 2083. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I've been listening to the debate, and I'm trying to bring up some recollections. And we talk about, you know, the Republicans did this ugly shift and so on. But I remember so absolutely vividly in a room across the hall here as I was called up as a member of majority leadership last year. And the message was, the governor wants to do 50-50. What do you think? In other words, the governor wants to do a 50-50% shift. And what do I think? It scared the daylights out of me. It absolutely scared the daylights out of me. I called a couple of school districts back home, and it scared the daylights out of them as well. So as we talk about who to blame, let's just understand where this all started. And that started with a governor that was proposing a 50-50 split in terms of a shift. So as I think about it, and as I've heard my colleagues talk, Where do we want our money, members? Do we want our monies in the state treasury, or do we want our money in schools across Minnesota that are educating kids? Think about that priority. It's pretty easy for me. Let's send this money back to the schools. Let's make the schools as whole as we can make them. We'll work on the rest of the shift going forward. But we have an opportunity to hear today, Mr. President and members, to to do something that's right for the kids of Minnesota. And let's simply make sure that we do it and that we do it right.
Further discussion, Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, thank you. You know, as we play the blame game in here and who's wrong and who's right, let's not forget that you all voted for a 60-40 shift that none of us voted for, and that's what caused the $2.4 billion budget deficit that we owe back to the schools right now. And as I've been going through life, I've been told that running up my credit card to the maximum is not a good idea. And it seems to me that's what we were doing on the state of Minnesota last year, because not only do we borrow from the school kids at 60-40 as a result of you not being able to see the way the governor was thinking, but we also use the bond to pay, make one-time payments, and we're going to be paying back for over 20 years. That's going to cost us twice as much as the bond did. And so the school kids are going to ultimately be paying for the bond in the long run also. And now that wasn't the governor's idea either. What the governor wanted to do was he wanted to tax 7,700 people whose bottom line on their tax return was over $1 million, and half of them don't even live in the state. Now, all of you thought that that would just blow up the whole entire economy, because these people would be creating all kinds of jobs with that tax money, and ultimately we would not be able to recover from what happened. And quite frankly, those jobs never showed up as you all said they would. And while the economy is recovering, it's recovering at the same, a little bit better pace than the federal economy is. So you can blame whoever you want to blame, but remember Governor Pawlenty signed the education bills back in 2010, and much of the reason the bills looked the way they looked was because he insisted they looked that way, and that was the way he wanted to compromise with us. And I do believe that the 70-30 shift was probably in your proposal in the beginning of the legislative session in 2011 also, as it was in Governor Dayton's. And when the negotiating came down to push and shove, you didn't want to compromise with the governor, and so he accepted the plan that you came up with, which was borrowing, borrowing, borrowing.
Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm just curious. I'm not interested in that blame game either, and I don't think Minnesotans are either. But I do think Minnesotans deserve accurate numbers and the facts when they hear what happens on the Minnesota floor. And so I would like to call on one of our education members that was here 2 years ago. I was not. But how much was that school shift back in 2009? And let's see, is Senator Olson able to answer that question?
Senator Olson.
Well, Senator Nelson, yes, I think it's already been answered several times, and it's in our notes. The 2011 or 10 shift was from 90-10 to 73-27, and in 11 it was reduced to the 70-30.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm looking for the actual numbers in the amount of shift. While I wasn't here, my understanding was that in 2010 it was $1.4 billion, and I believe the 2011 shift was $700 million, adding up to that $2 billion number that Senator Tomasoni was mentioning.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to respond to Senator Tomasoni's comment that you don't want to max out the credit card. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that this is what a family would do in Minnesota. If they had money in the savings account and they had a credit card, they'd pay back as much of it as they could, as soon as they could, if they were good fiscal stewards. And in a lot of ways, you know, we know that's out there, and we want to pay back as much as we can and be fiscally responsible about it, leave some money in the account, and pay back what we can. So I think it's a responsible thing to do when you compare it to that situation.
Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, I appreciate all the speeches looking back and pointing fingers, but what we have in front of us is a bill that's a solution looking forward. we have what would amount to the second installment of paying back any current outstanding shift. We also have a provision that will create a permanent structural statutory provision to pay back any school shift that exists today, tomorrow, or ever again in the future. The provision, the amendment that I added in the Finance Committee, you know, it's interesting. You take a look at the spreadsheet, line 180, Senator Cohen brought your attention to that. I am shocked that the governor's administration would assume that we have to spend more. I'm shocked that they would assume we have to have a deficit, add to the deficit, in order to handle this. Mr. President, members, the provision that I added in the Finance Committee simply forces this legislature to address the reality, if there's a shift, address the reality that it should be paid back, and ask the question, how is it going to happen? Now, there's two ways to make that happen. One is you can spend less and decide the government can live on 99% of its revenue and use 1% to pay back the shift. The other solution is that you can spend more and raise the revenue and budget instead of at 100%, budget at 101%. That's a decision for future legislatures if this becomes law. But the key point, members, the legislature will have to make a decision. Today, there's nothing to force the legislature to pay back a school shift at all.
Mr. Paul?
All the years that this body has been controlled by the other party, all the times that school shifts have been created and slowly paid back and recreated and expanded, never have we had a permanent guaranteed mechanism to pay back any existing shift. Finally, now in 2004, I believe it was, we did create what is now current law that if we do end up with a surplus, then it will first pay back the cash flow account, then the cash reserves, and third, the school shift. So finally, in 2004, and I was here and I was glad to vote for that, finally in 2004, K-12 shifts made the list, but without any guarantee. If the legislature decided we're going to spend that surplus, K-12 didn't get a dime. This provision would guarantee that K-12 would incrementally, structurally get paid back. Now, talking about math, again, members, I said I'm shocked that the Dayton administration would assume that we have to spend more and assume that we have to add to a deficit. Let's talk math. Well, first of all, the spreadsheet that was created by MMB, I presume, are the same people that were in the same finance committee when I added my amendment onto this bill. And I asked the person from MMB what they thought about my language. They had just seen it. They didn't have an opinion. But I had two other questions. The first question I had was, back last year when we were doing all this budgeting, when the governor was putting together his budget, what was the projected deficit in the out years? Today, now after the legislature has done some good work over the last year, today now we have a projected deficit in the out years of about $1 billion. And that's a problem we'll have to deal with next year. But a year ago, when we were working on budgeting, what was the projected deficit? And their answer was, it was about $2 billion. And I said, okay. When the governor was putting together his budget, and the projected deficit in the out years was $2 billion, twice as big as it is today, what did the governor recommend to have in reserve? And their answer, Mr. President, was incorrect. They did bad math. Their response was, and I believe this is a quote, about a couple hundred million. Now, Senator Roebling, finance chair, just spoke and told us what the real numbers were, somewhere between 100 and 110. Now, think about that, members. The governor was putting together his fiscally responsible budget last year, projecting a $2 billion deficit in the out years, and being so fiscally responsible
that he left $100 million in cash reserves. Fast forward to today, and that same administration is preaching to this legislature how fiscally irresponsible we're being with a $1 billion deficit and $600 million in reserves, cash flow and reserves. So we cut the deficit in half and built up reserves sixfold compared to what the governor was proposing last year as fiscally responsible. Members, that's some interesting math.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. So we can all agree that shifts are bad, and we can all agree that governors of both parties have signed bills that had shifts in them, and we can all agree that legislators have voted for shifts that didn't want to vote for shifts. I've listened to a lot of history being revisited here today. But members, if you don't learn from that history, you're condemned to repeat it. And the lesson from what happened was that when you spend one-time money for ongoing expenses, you're going to have a deficit problem. And this bill spends one-time money for ongoing expenses. And it shouldn't be done. We should have learned from the past. We shouldn't repeat it. And I urge you to vote no on this deficit spending bill.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I wasn't here last year when all these decisions were made, but I think it's clear that it wasn't the best idea to borrow from the schools. And I just see this as another accounting gimmick. Instead of fixing our budget, let's just shift money around again and hope that the economy gets better and we can worry about it next year. I guess that's not how I like to see things done in the Senate. Thank you.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. President. I felt the temperature rising in here a little bit, and Senator Nunaw woke me up. But you know, I think let's just for a brief moment back away from the use of the shift as being good or bad. We've used the ability to borrow from schools for many, many years, and some people will say, oh, you shouldn't do it. Some people say, yeah, that's all right. But I think in reality, back when we, I think through the 90s and into the early 2000s, it took us 17 years to buy back that shift at that time. I don't know exactly the total dollar amount. But in 2000, we started borrowing more money. And so some of us, and I happen to be the author of that because I was chairing the Education Finance Committee, put a provision in the bill, the Education Finance Bill, that said basically when the cash flow fund was filled and the reserve was filled, that at that point all the remaining new forecast money would go into paying back the shift. So in 2004, that was enacted. Between 2004 and 2006, we had $2 billion that we had borrowed from school districts. And in that two-year period, over four forecasts that were made, that $2 billion was paid back. And so I think we shouldn't get all steamed up about whether shifts are good or bad or whether we should use them or not use them. The legislature has a history of working out some of those financial problems. I think what bothers me was what happens if we do not kind of abide by the rules, the finance rules that we put in place, such as filling up that cash flow fund and then filling up the reserve. If we go dipping into that and demonstrate that we're not going to abide by some of those financial principles, we do see what happens. And what happens is our credit rating gets lowered. And that's more damaging not only to the state of Minnesota, but also all those local units of government that rely on our good credit rating to borrow money. Now, you can say, well, the school districts, we shouldn't allow them to borrow, or shouldn't have them borrow so much. In reality, the close to $600 million that school districts had to borrow, they borrowed, and the mean interest rate that they paid was 0.4%. Now, remember, that's short-term, so it's not like it's long-term money. But how much lower? It's almost as if it was, I can't say free money because it's not free, but 0.4% for $600 million. So the school districts, even though they had to borrow, it was a point in our history, our financial history, where it was very reasonably priced money. So that's the point I wanted to make, is that I think it's quite risky when MMB comes in and says we're going to have to maybe go out and borrow more money because we haven't lived up to our commitment on the cash flow fund and the reserve. The swing is pretty hefty in terms of the demands on the state treasury at times, and I would we know, with history behind us, we know that the shift will get paid back. The economy is on the rebound. Anybody that has stocks in the stock market should realize that in the last two-year time, they almost doubled. And so hopefully the economy will continue to grow, and as that grows, the revenues of the state will come, will be there, and the shift will be paid off.
Further discussion on House File 2083. Seeing none, Secretary will give it its third reading.
House File Number 2083, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Further discussion on House File 2083. Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, there's one more thing in this bill that is very disconcerting, and that is that there's an attempt to eliminate continuing contract negotiations also. And the fact of the matter is that this is should not be a bill that, if we are talking about the shift and funding the shift and whatever else in here, that we shouldn't be talking about a collective bargaining that goes on also. And in here, they talk about freezing wages and salaries and Q-comp and merit pay and whatever else is in there that could possibly be going to school districts, and it totally is another attack on teachers and their, and what they do and how they work. And I that's another reason to vote against this bill, members. It has something in it that has no business being in it.
Further discussion, Senator Sieben.
Thank you. Mr. President, I'd urge members to vote no on this bill that's before us today. In the Education Committee, I offered an amendment to the proposal that would have paid back the remainder of the school shift by closing corporate tax loopholes. And while there's a lot of back and forth about who is responsible for what portion of the shift, I think that it's important to keep in mind that the schools across this district, across the state of Minnesota, the school districts that each of us represent, are relying on us as adults, as the legislators, as the legislature of the state of Minnesota, to provide fair and adequate funding for our public schools. And what the bill before us does today is risky in that it relies on budget reserves instead of new source of revenue to pay back our shift, to pay back the money we owe our school children. So I'd urge members to think long term, that it doesn't make financial sense to rely on one-time money or to rely on Senator Nienau's proposal that, as Senator Cohen pointed out, we'll just obligate the state for future obligations adding piling on to our debt. What we need to do is come up with a new source of funding to pay back the shift. And I did offer that amendment in the Education Committee. We should be looking at foreign sources of income from corporations. Corporations that in Minnesota right now aren't paying their fair share of taxes, that aren't paying as much as a percentage as Main Street businesses in Minnesota. So again, I just encourage members to vote no and come up with a better solution.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I wanted to respond to Senator Tomasoni. The provision to which he referred does not alter collective bargaining. It just says that when the contract term is up, that the automatic pilot of steps and lanes would not just continue. When the negotiations go on and when that is settled, obviously that will be attended to. So that is not what is, that is not, there's no attempt to either attack teachers or to undo collective bargaining.
Further discussion on House File 2083. Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll. All senators desiring to vote having voted, Secretary will close the roll. There being 35 ayes and 29 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next item in under special orders, we'll take up number 78, Senate File 2183, Senator Thompson.
Mr. President, members, thank you. Senate File 2183 deals specifically with the Commissioner of Education, and what has come to my attention and the attention of others is that occasionally there are letters that are written by the Commissioner or responses, memorandums to school districts that are being almost presented or represented as though they have the force and effect of law, as though they had gone through the administrative procedures required in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 14. And so what this bill would do if it is passed and signed into law is that it would simply require the commissioner to make clear when a pronouncement is issued or a question is responded to or a letter is sent that does not have the force of law. This would require the commissioner to advise the individual or individuals that are being responded to of this fact, and then also consistent with Section 14.381 sub 1, this just points out to individual districts that they are clearly able to ask the Office of Administrative Hearings for an order stating that certain pronouncements and things do not have the force of law. So this really is simply a way of making sure the districts understand the difference between those pronouncements that do not have the force of law and those pronouncements that have been through the administrative process and therefore do have the force of law. And I would ask the members to support Senate File 2183.
Further discussion on Senate File 2183. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. President. Having worked with commissioners in the past for many years, members, I want to express a serious concern on this bill. To have a notice in a piece of letter in a communication from a commissioner that simply says, oh, by the way, you don't, this is not a law, is really undermining the authority of a commissioner. And I think it's completely, completely unnecessary. Boards, administrators in different districts absolutely understand the difference between a bulletin, a letter that comes from the commissioner. But when you have to put a note that says, by the way, you know, this is not a law, you don't really have to do it because it's not a statute, it didn't come from the legislature, that's just simply not fair, members. It's just simply not fair. It is not necessary. We don't have to do this. There is absolutely no reason to add this provision to a letter from the commissioner's office.
Further discussion on Senate File 2183. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Torres Ray yield?
She will yield.
Okay. I would ask Senator Torres Ray, do you believe it is reasonable that a school district or an administrator would believe something to have the force of law, or perhaps be led to believe that if in fact it does not have the force of law?
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. President. No, I don't. But I just don't believe that they need to put in a letter that it isn't. A letter from a commissioner is a very serious letter. A document that comes from the executive is a serious document. Districts know the difference between a letter or a bulletin or an announcement that comes from executive office. They know that is not the law. They understand the difference. But having to say, by the way, this is not a law, it really just undermines the authority of a commissioner. And I just don't see the need for it.
Further discussion on Senate File 2183. Seeing none, the Secretary will give it its third reading.
Senate File Number 2183, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Further discussion on Senate File 2183. Seeing none, Secretary will take the roll. All senators that desire to vote having voted, Secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 27 nays, the bill is passed in its title agreed to. Moving on next in special orders, number 127, House File 1524, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill was brought to me by the school principal organizations, the Association of Secondary School Principals, and the Minnesota Elementary School Principal Associations. These organizations represent the 1,700 school principals in Minnesota. From time to time, districts need a substitute principal for a short period of time. This bill allows retired principals to maintain their license and serve in these districts without taking extensive continuing education credits. Principals may substitute for up to 15 consecutive days. This is very helpful, particularly for small school districts in rural areas when a principal is gone for just a short period of time and a substitute is needed. This provision is similar to the rule for retired substitute teachers. The licenses are under the jurisdiction of the Board of School Administrators. The bill has had no opposition and passed in the House 133-0. Thank you. I stand for questions.
Further discussion on House File 1524. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, would Senator Bonhoff yield?
She will yield.
Senator Bonhoff, I may be the only person in this room that doesn't know this, but why couldn't a retired school principal, except for the law, serve longer than, well, apparently right now they can't serve at all. Is that correct? I'm just trying to understand why somebody that's probably has a fair amount of qualifications cannot continue to work, at least even in a substitute fashion, if he or she wants to.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, it's not that they can't work. It's that to be able to continue in that function, they have to do ongoing continuing education, because I think, you know, if you think about it, it is important if, whether it be a teacher or a principal is going to be taking an active role, we want to make sure that they are kept up to date with current practices with regard to both their the law and the ordinary course of fulfilling their functions. And yet we want them to be able to be in that function for short periods of time without being discouraged because of the requirement for the continuing education. So that 15 days was an agreement that was reached that seemed to satisfy both groups. I was not asked to eliminate that entirely.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Maybe just to carry on just a bit longer, and I can understand 15 days is what you have in your bill, but I could also understand a circumstance, for instance, a principal in a car accident that may be out for a month, maybe 6 weeks. In that case, could we not use a retired principal to fill a vacancy like that, or would they have to have all these continuing education credits and so on, you know, available in their resume, so to speak, to do that?
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, they would in fact be subject to, beyond the 15 days, the requirement to continue taking CLE credits. And Senator Senjum, if you would like to offer a friendly amendment in that you think 15 days is too short and you'd like to offer a different time period, I would accept that, but I'm just careful in terms of the unintended consequences, given I haven't spoken to the principals about it. But it certainly seems reasonable to me if that's something you choose to do.
Senator Senjum.
Well, thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Mr. President, I'm a little reluctant, because I just think 15 days, that's, you know, that's 2 weeks. I'm not sure if that's 3 weeks by school time or whatever, but it does seem a little short, given the kind of situations which might arise in a school district, say a car accident or any number of other things, an illness that may be a little more prolonged, a surgery or something like that. Seems like 15 days a little short, but I'm not sure I want to, without further information or a wink and a nod, offer anything more than what you have here today.
Further discussion on House File 1524. Secretary will give it its third reading.
House File Number 1524, Bill for an Act Relating to Education, third reading.
Further discussion on House File 1524. Secretary will take the roll.
All senators voting who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 60 yeas and 3 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next on special orders is number 160, Senate File 2409, Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 2409 is intended to close the gap of Data Practices Act that has recently caused a very publicized controversy in the Burnsville Eagan Savage School District 191. There was an agreement involving a human resource director who worked less than 18 months in the district and yet was paid a sum of over $250,000 in a dispute settlement. This is in excess of $10,000 of public money, an amount of money defined in the current law that requires a specific reason to be provided to the public. A current specific reason might be given as we are avoiding the cost of litigation. When the school board members, superintendent, and school officials were asked about the terms of the settlement, the response was the Data Practices Act, under current law, prohibits us from providing any details whatsoever. This response to me has understandably provoked many questions in the public. The public deserves to have a reasonable and pertinent information when a payment over $10,000 of public money is paid out in a dispute settlement. This bill has two main sections. In the language of the original bill, which was passed in 1995-96, the first change is in line 2.5, an expansion and clarification of the language defining specific reasons, which includes a reasonable description of facts prompting the disagreement or the agreement. And second, the change is on line 3.3 to 3.8, which specifically defines the levels of employment included in this change. I believe the current law allows a lack of accountability and even perhaps a lack of responsibility in the use of public dollars in our school districts. I am open for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 2409. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Hall, this bill did come before the Judiciary Committee because it has data practices implications, and I remember having a discussion about it, and I remember that the parties were going to take it and work on it before it came to the Senate floor. Could you please tell me what kind of work was done on it, and are the parties involved in some agreement on this then? Because I know there was some concerns about this bill.
Are you asking Senator Hall to yield?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. President. Yes, would Senator Hall yield?
Senator Hall will. Senator Hall.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator McGuire. The bill came up on the floor actually before we could really get to the details of it, and so we are going to go into a discussion with them when we present this with the House bill in conference committee.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. So to understand that nothing got worked out then from the committee, so there will still be concerns about it, but you're telling me that you're taking it into conference committee and working on the concerns in conference committee because this bill will be different than the House bill, Senator Hall, and I guess I'm asking Senator Hall to yield again.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I was listening to two people at the same time here. We do have some different language that an amendment that's being drafted. And what I would like to do is set this on the table for right now. And so, Mr. Chair, I would move that we would put this on the table. Is that how we do it?
Thank you, Senator Hall.
Senate File 2409 by Senator Hall moves to lay it on the table. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Remaining under motions and messages, third order messages from the House. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, is there a committee report at the desk?
Before that, Senator Senjum, Secretary will read the report from the
Madam
House.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 2738, a bill for an act relating to the amendment to the Minnesota Constitution. The House respectfully requests that the Conference Committee of five members be appointed thereon: Kiffmeyer, Anderson S., Benson M., Downey, and Drazdowski have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 2738 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File Number 2738. And that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, I'd like to call for a brief recess to for purposes of appointing a conference committee.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Senate is in recess.
Mr. President, is there a privilege report at the desk?
Yes, there is. Secretary?
Senator Senjum from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File Number 2738. Senators Newman, Limmer, Thompson, Daley, and Lilly. Senator Senjum moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Pappas.
Point of inquiry.
Your inquiry.
Thank you. Would Senator Fischbach yield?
Senator Fischbach is not in the chambers.
Would Senator Senjum yield then?
Senator Senjum will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Senjum, you were with us when we were hanging out in 107, I think it was last Friday night, till about 10:30, waiting for the Ethics Subcommittee to reconvene. The agreement had been, when there was a recess, that the committee would reconvene after session. And we waited there for about an hour, and Senator Fischbach never showed up to reconvene the Ethics Subcommittee. So I'm wondering if you've had any conversations with her about what her intention is
to
reconvene.
Excuse me, we will get to that, and I'll allow that once we move into announcements of Senate interest. We are not under that order of business at that time.
Mr. President, I apologize. I thought I could do an inquiry at any point.
No, thank you. Senator Gazelka.
Mr. President, I have Senate File 2478 on general orders, and it needs to be referred to the Committee on Finance.
That's your motion?
Yes, Mr. President.
Secretary?
Senator Gazelka moves that Senate File 2478, number 121 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
On that motion, Senator Olson? No. Okay. On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Now, Mr. President.
Senator Olson.
Mr. President, I would move that House File 873, number 2 on general orders, be stricken and referred to the Committee on Finance. I've talked with the Committee on Finance, and somehow that got here without ever going to Finance. We'd like it there.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Moving on now to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I won't repeat the long explanation, but would Senator Senjum yield?
Senator Senjum will yield.
Thank you. Senator Senjum, could you tell me if you have any information from Senator Fischbach about when the Ethics Subcommittee might reconvene?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, members, Senator Pappas, I do not. Senator Fischbach is not with us today. I've not talked to her. So the answer is no.
Mr. President.
Senator Pappas.
Senator Senjum, do we have any explanation as to why she didn't return to the Ethics Subcommittee after the agreement was by the committee that the committee would reconvene after session?
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, members, on the advice of counsel, we were asked to suspend the proceedings that evening, and the leadership did have a meeting with the Senate counsel this morning, and we will see where this goes going forward. I'm not going to say anything more about this, again, based on advice of counsel.
Thank you.
Further announcements of Senate interest? Without objection, the following senators are excused. Senator Fischbach and Brown all day. Hoffman from 12 to 1:30. Higgins from 1:15 to 2:50. Dzizek 1:15 to 2:50. Hayden 1:15 to 2. Laurie 3:10 to the end. Senator Senjum, Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, would Senator Han yield for a question? Han.
Senator Han will yield.
Senator Han, will you give us an update on what the schedule for the Health Committee today is?
Senator Han.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Higgins, we were not sure how long we would be going on today, so we are going to convene this evening at 6 o'clock.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. President. The business of the day now being completed, we will adjourn until Tuesday, March 27th at 11 a.m.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Senate is in adjournment.